Ian Fidance is a longtime stand-up comedian who is bringing that talent to Austin this weekend at Creek and the Cave. Two shows Friday, two shows Saturday. You can snag tickets at creekandcave.com. Ian, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Trey. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure. So I've seen you a couple of times now, as I mentioned in our Instagram DM correspondence. The first time, I think, was about a year ago, and it was a memorable show for a couple of reasons. One, you were featuring for Dave Attell, and then you actually come out on stage at the end of that show, and it's an incredible two-man-plus show or two-person-plus show because you bring the other comics up, and you may get the crowd involved a little bit. So it was great because it was just a great comedy show. It was also memorable because it's the first time in my life I've been messed with by a comic. I was sitting front row, which, of course, is just asking for it from Attell. And sure enough, he called me a battle bot because I'm a 46-year-old guy with a faux hawk. It was great. And he said it really quickly and moved on, too, to where it didn't resonate with the crowd. But I loved it personally. The third reason is because I was sitting right next to these two younger girls. And I'm not even kidding you. They were on their phones the entire time through the two openers and then up to you, which was a big mistake to do that with you on stage because you absolutely let them have it. I think you grabbed the phone at one point. You started hammering one of the girls for some dude that clearly didn't like her, that she's sweating. Do you remember this at all? Because it was an awesome moment for me.
Oh, yeah, that was at Cap City, right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah, I don't know. I came up in Philly, man. I'm from Delaware.
Yeah.
And I started comedy in Philly, and then I moved to New York. I guess it's like an East Coast thing. Like, I don't take shit from anyone. And I'm wildly mentally ill in the sense that if a room full of people are loving it and there's one person who's not into it or they're doing something, I hyper focus on that. And while I'm talking, a voice gets louder in my head that's like, address, 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 address. So I just had to do it. And I remember that. That was really, really fun. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's,
I think I called her boyfriend on stage, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's asking for it too, though. If you're distracted by your phone, and look, there's a lot of places that are smartly now, and the Mothership is obviously one of these places, as you guys saw a couple weekends ago, where they just have you put your bag in a pouch so it's not even a distraction. The fact that they thought that they were okay doing this, sitting at the stage, was bizarre to say the least. And I'm hoping that
it's the
last time that if they're ever at a comedy show that they're pulling something like that.
Oh yeah, it's insane. The things that people think are okay to show and to be in the front row of a comedy show and just be on your foot. She wasn't even like typing like this. I distinctly remember she was like lifting it up because she was drunk too. So she's like, well, if I lift it up, that'll make it easier to read. And it's crazy. It's insane. And sometimes you gotta let these motherfuckers know. You know what I mean? So I guarantee they're never doing that at a comedy show again. So there you go.
Yeah, exactly. So you've been to Austin on several occasions now, performed all over the place. You're going to be at Creek in the Cave this weekend, which for me personally, I would be excited to see it, except I'm going to be out of town. I'm going to be in West Texas of all places. But does it surprise you at all, having been in Austin like you have, to see this place turn into such a stand-up mecca like it has over the last few years?
You know, I mean, I think Austin was ripe for it because Austin's such a great town. It's such a creative town. And Austin was always a good comedy scene. And I think they just needed something to put them over that little hump, you know. And I think the Mothership has been a great thing for attracting not only comedians, but comedy fans. And, you know, I know, like, if you're a young comic, the idea is, you know, I just got to get down to Austin. But then the question is, well, what do you do when you're down there? You know, like, I know for me, it was, you got to get to New York. And then I spent years being like, all right, I'm here. Okay. With no like drive direction, you know. But also back when I started, we had the internet, but it wasn't like you film yourself, you put yourself on social media, and then you take off. You know, there was none of that. So it was just a lot of, I think for a while, I can only speak to my experience, but I think for a while it was just, okay, we're just going to grind out. And then the magic claw machine of Hollywood and the networks will pick you up and then place you in on the Tonight Show. And then you'll get placed on another thing. And it's definitely changed to where everything is on our power. It's in our hands. So, you know, I think people recognize that and they go, what's the best place to get up and get reps in and do as much as you can? And I think that's awesome right now, you know, but I enjoy going down there. You know, I'll never leave. I'll never leave. I'm New York through and through. You know, I still think the Mecca is New York. I mean, I think this is where you get great, you know, and I love
Austin. It's because it's not just the comedy is so competitive. It's just the fact that the city is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I noticed even though there's like tons of comedy, it's still like laid back down in Austin, you know, and up here, it's just, I don't know. There's just something that can't be replicated from New York anywhere else. And I take pride in that, you know?
So things got pretty messed up in a lot of big cities during COVID, Chicago, San Francisco, Portland, out in LA, New York wasn't immune from that. Do you feel New York, because it is always a city that bounces back, it is starting to enter that bounce back phase, or things still pretty messed up there right now?
I mean, the only thing that hasn't bounced back is late night eating. Everything else is back, but man, I'll tell you, it is so hard to eat late night, places closed. This used to be the diner, you know, destination. It was just everywhere. I can only count a handful of diners right now that are open 24 hours, and they're all spread throughout the city, you know? And so that's the one thing New York has lost is late night food. But aside from that, it's back, man. I know we were like ground zero for everything, and I stayed through it all. I didn't leave. And it was definitely wild to witness everything with my own eyes, but it's back, and all the credit, I have to say, needs to go to the arts and entertainment communities for keeping that going during the pandemic. I mean, I know as comics, we were out in fields, we were in parks, we were on sidewalks, we were on rooftops, we were in the back of people's houses doing these shows as early as June of 2020, and that helped bring a feeling of normalcy to things. And you know, once they opened up Broadway, and you know, just like seeing people play music on the streets, like anything to make people felt normal was really cool. And so I know music and art and, you know, comedy was a big part of that.
Yeah, Sam Morril, he filmed a pretty good stand-up special on a rooftop, and
I opened all those shows.
Weird, but it was still great material, though.
I opened all those shows for him, so I would get a call in the middle of the day, because some of them were, you know, 25-year-old apartments that were trying to, like, he would say, hey, why don't you throw a party on your roof and I'll do comedy? So they're like, all right. So they're dealing with like, okay, we got all these people for this roof. And I get a call that's like, all right, the roof location is at 121 Water Street. I'm like, all right, I'll be there. You know, it was cool. There was something very DIY, do it yourself, guerrilla marketing about it too. That was really, really neat. It brought me back to like punk rock. It was really cool.
Yeah. And I think this renewed interest in stand-up is also a result of just how oppressed, for whatever reason, how oppressed everybody was through that first 6 months to a year to 2 years, depending on where you lived, on top of things getting weird language-wise, where you had people getting canceled theoretically based on things that were being said 5 to 10 years ago. Sometimes that stuff was taken out of context. Sometimes it was perfectly in context, but it's like, how long are we going to hold something over somebody's head and not allow any level of forgiveness in return? And people want to hear serious issues talked about in a joking manner. Now, you can do so in a way that's ignorant and hateful, and it shouldn't fly on stage. But those who do it the best, they often tend to poke holes on both sides, but they take these taboo issues and they are responsible enough to discuss those things to where people are laughing at the end of whatever the point is.
I totally agree. I totally agree, especially with the, you know, poking holes on both sides. Anyone that claims they are one side and not anything of the other, I'm suspect about, you know, especially in terms of their point of view or their understanding of the world. I can't get down with extremism on either side. I think the goal is to always find truth, and the truth lies in the middle. And I'm not even saying that politically or anything. I'm saying that with everything. There's always two sides to everything, and both sides deserve to be made fun of, you know? And I think in terms of you know, language and getting people in trouble. I travel the country every weekend. People are tired. They just want to laugh. The world is shit. Life is horrible. And how blessed am I that I get to go to different towns and help people forget about how terrible things are for an hour at a time by just laughing. I just love laughing. I think it's one of the best emotions that you can have and elicit from someone is laughter and joy. And I'm so fortunate that I get to bring that to different people in different towns. And I don't take it for granted, you know. And I hate comedians that waste people's time by trying to get serious with things or trying to teach them things, you know. At the end of the day, we're clowns, okay? Don't forget that. We're traveling clowns, okay?
Yeah, I almost hate to call it a cliche, but the whole cliche, laughter is the best medicine, isn't a cliche because it's true. It does help people to feel just better all about their overall disposition, being able to go out on a Thursday,
Yeah.
Friday, Saturday night and just laugh senselessly, I guess, for an hour or so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's true. Laughter is the best medicine, but I found out that that actually wasn't true during the pandemic when I went into hospitals and they kicked me out. So.
Well done there. So Ian, you mentioned that you're from Wilmington, Delaware. Here's how little I know about Delaware. When I was doing a little bit of research for this conversation, I'm like, oh, I know one thing about Delaware. Washington crossed the Delaware to get to the Battle of Trenton, but the Delaware River was not in Delaware. It was in Pennsylvania into New Jersey. And the only other thing that I learned about Delaware in my limited research was that apparently it was very split during the Civil War. So for people like myself who are unfamiliar with Wilmington and or Delaware, what are those city and state all about?
Well, I got to thank you, Trey. You just did more research on Delaware than most Delawareans. So you're really doing great, man. Thank you. It's funny, man. I'm from Wilmington, which is the I grew up behind a shopping center off a main road that's like 5 minutes away from like the city, like bad city, you know? And people don't realize that Delaware is it, there's I mean it's off 95.
Yeah.
So during the 2000s and everything with the opiate crisis, Delaware is the main pipeline from which all these drugs were funneling through, down from Florida up to Delaware, Baltimore, Philly, New York, Boston. So people always forget, like Delaware can hang when it comes to, you know, being tough and dealing with all this shit. Delaware is a part of it, but it's a drive-through state. People drive through, they don't stay. I love it. I love Delaware. It's the best place to grow up. It was a really cool little area because it's unique, you know. Not many people are from there, and I'm glad I left. I'm glad I got out, but I always love going back. Seeing people, seeing friends. It was split during the Civil War, actually. There's only three counties in Delaware. There's Newcastle County, Kent County, and Sussex County. And it's Delaware small and it's bop, bop, bop. And the lowest part of Delaware, which us Northerners put our heads up at, our nose up at, we call it slower, lower because everything is so slow down there. That's the area that's like, am I in a time machine? You know? That's the part of Delaware that's near the Mason-Dixon line. That's lower Delaware. But the majority of Delaware is great, man. And even to that part of Delaware is great too, because you have to go down there for the beaches. So it's a cool state. It's really unique. Not many people give it credit, but it's got a lot of history. The last public shaming place in the United States took place in Delaware. The last stockade was in Delaware.
Oh man, I feel like you would be an exceptional public shamer if such a job existed in modern times.
Well, you get on your cell phone on one of my shows and it's happening, baby. Let's go.
Exactly. So you move from Delaware to Philadelphia, which is where you get your start in comedy. And I say what I'm about to say lovingly. I love this style. Philadelphia cranks out a bunch of really fucked up comedians, and you're in that category. Then again, I'm somebody that as a kid, in elementary school, I wrote a story called Garfield, the Mass Murdering Cat, where Garfield gets fed up with all the assholes in his life and just goes on a murderous rampage. My teacher was extremely disturbed. I got called into the principal's office, but I did also get an A on that paper too, for whatever it's worth. What is it about?
Yeah, because they were scared of you, Trey.
Well, they had good reason to be, I guess. What is it about Philadelphia that creates such a messed up and hilarious brand of comedy?
we're underdogs. No, we're New York's little brother. We're the town that nobody believes in. We're perennial losers. The Phillies are the most losingest franchise in the history of baseball. You know, you got to prove yourself. And I love that kind of place. I love those kind of people that it's like, nah, I'm not getting anything. I'm proving it. I'm working hard. It's a hard working town. And the only way to get better is through hard work. And no town, no place embodies it more than Philadelphia, you know, and Delaware too, for an extent, because I never lived in Philly. I used to drive from Delaware to Philly to start comedy. Right? Yeah. So I would drive like 45 minutes up to Philly every night for open mics and everything, and then drive back down to Delaware.
Was that whole process starting about 13 years ago? Is that when you really started to get into stand-up?
Yeah. February 1st, 2011 was my first open mic, and my buddy that I picked up, he and I are still thick as thieves today. He's doing great. His name's Tim Butterly. He's a really funny comic. And it's really cool, man. All the guys I started with were still in arms. We're still brothers in arms, you know, and like we're still, I was just with one of them last night, Kevin Ryan from the Are You Garbage podcast. We all started in Philly at the same place called the Raven Lounge. And 13 years later, you know, we've gone this way, that way, and we all come together. And that really means a lot to me, man. Everyone in my life that I keep in my inner circle is from Delaware, Philly, like old, like my manager I've known since I was 16, you know. I was in a punk rock ska band, and his sister used to drag him to the shows, you know. So I just love anyone that's been in my life for a while, especially from Philadelphia. And we're really lucky to have that. I know not a lot of people or comics have that.
Were you coming up at the same time? This may have been a little bit after Big J, but like the Big J's and Gillis and like David James, guys like that, were they still in Philly at that time too?
No, I was kind of in the middle of Big J and Shane. So Big J and Kev and Kurt Metzger and Joe DeRosa, they were like years and years and years ahead of us. But
I didn't realize DeRosa was a Philly guy too. That makes sense though.
Yeah. So they would all get in a car and Keith Robinson would drive them up to New York and they would hang, and he kind of put them over up in New York. And then, me and my Philly guys, we kind of all slowly started to move up and everything. And I went to school in New York. So I moved to New York in 2003, but then I drank my life away in 2008 and had to move to Delaware. So when I started, I lived in a halfway house in Delaware, driving to Philly with a breathalyzer on my car to make it work, picking up my buddies. And then I moved from that halfway house to New York. So like those guys were great for including me in the Philly crew, but I, you know, I'm a Delaware guy. And then once we got up in New York, that's when Shane started coming up. I think like maybe like 2015, 2016 or something, 17. I don't know, but we became fast friends once he started coming up to New York. Cause we used to just rip cigs outside of shows. Cause, I would only hang out with people I knew from Philly, because a lot of these New Yorkers were crazy, you know? So it was very like an us against them thing, which, you know, I don't know. I guess it's like another Philly thing, but it's, I don't know. It's neat. Not a lot of places have that, you know?
Okay, dude, you just made me so happy, because I've never met somebody else who had to deal with the breathalyzer on the car, but I also had to deal with that around the same time. It is truly one of the most humbling things you can possibly go through on a date or otherwise, that you're going 65 miles per hour on a highway, and all of a sudden you have to pull this beeping contraption up from your seat and blow into it to prove to the state that you haven't had any alcoholic beverages or mouthwash for that matter.
Oh, yeah. And not only that, Trey, but this is how they fuck you. They charge you to put it on the car.
Yep.
They charge you to calibrate it, and they charge you to take it off.
Yep.
And it's, I mean, talk about a first impression, you know, picking up someone you barely know on a date. You're like, hey, honey, something's got to get blown in this car. One drives it and the other starts it. So what's it going to be, you know?
Oh, God, that was great. Oh, man. All right, Ian, just a couple more questions here. And I do appreciate the time today.
Thank you, Trey.
Question number one of two, smart people tend to ask themselves a lot of questions, and typically there's one overriding question at a given point in time. For you, as somebody who strikes me as really smart, sharp, you're quick, Is there that one overriding question for you right now? And if so, what is it?
I guess, thank you for that compliment. I appreciate that, Trey. I guess it could be, what can I do better? I'm always trying to improve myself. And the one, I mean, my biggest goal is, the only thing I want to do is be a great stand-up and a great person, you know? And I think those go hand in hand, because I think for me, finding truth in your own life and living a certain truthful, honest way is the only way to be better offstage. But also for me, that's where I want my comedy to be, absolute truth, whether it's truth in the moment or truth in how I see things. And one feeds the other, you know. So I'm constantly asking myself, like, trying to distill down, like, what separates the real from the unreal? What's the truth, and how can I be better? I just want to make today better than yesterday and tomorrow better than today. And I think constantly seeking and questioning is the way to go.
Beautiful answer there. And that dovetails nicely into my last question. What do you love about stand-up?
Oh, man. I mean, okay, you want to talk about truth? The fucking attention, the fucking immediate gratification, the fucking love, an audible hug that I didn't get when I was a kid. That's what I loved, you know? No, but in to be serious about it, I think I do love the seeking, you know, like always trying to seek and be better and always trying to go, okay, like when I go on stage, I try to, I'll tell myself, go as long as you can without telling a joke. And so, cause I have jokes, obviously I have an act, but I get such an exhilarating feel out of not knowing where I'm going to go or what I'm going to say, and training myself to speak in jokes and find the funny wherever it goes. And that's my favorite thing right now, is finding the funny in no matter what I do or what I say. And that's been really, really fun for me. And I feel like I'm like an ornery kid again when I'm on stage, making people laugh by just being silly and figuring it out right before your eyes, you know?
Well, that's interesting you say that, because I feel like in both shows I've watched you start things off by just looking at the crowd and finding funny things within the crowd, which gets the crowd to pay attention. Well, I can't say for the rest of the time, because we're space cadets here in 2024, but it gets more of the crowd to pay attention for longer than they might have otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, I do. I try to just find one thing in the crowd. If it's, I don't know, something that grabs my attention, and then just, again, like, ask questions and then seek and then go here and then there. And then, oh, that reminds me of this. And then somehow I'll try to find my way back to the thing I've been working on that I want to make funnier. And I want it to be as organic as possible. And so that's the thing I love about stand-up, is that you can't fake it. You can't, you know, like, some people can. Some people are really good at doing the same joke over and over, and I admire that. And I wish that was me, but I'm not the guy. I can't, if I'm feeling a certain way, I got to follow that feeling. And again, like, that's helped me in truth, to try to just be as honest as possible. You know, if I'm seeing something, I notice it in the room, I'm going to call it out, because that's what I'm seeing and feeling at that time. You know,
especially if you're featuring for Dave Attell, at that point you have no choice but to find new things to talk about. And yeah. Look, he is not featuring for Dave Attell this weekend at Creek in the Cave. He is headlining. I am bummed not to get to be a part of this, but I'm going to be at a bachelor party in West Texas. You should check it out, though. There's two shows Friday, two shows Saturday. Creekinthecave.com is where you should go to grab tickets for Ian Fidance. You can also check out his website, ianfidance.com. That last name is spelled FIDANCE.com. Ian, a real pleasure, man. Thank you so much for the time today.
Thank you, Trey. I really appreciate you reaching out and making time for me as well. So thank you so much, man.
Thanks to Gentleman Jesus for the intro and outro music. Hear more of his work at gentlemanjesus.com. Thanks to you for hanging out. For more of the show and to connect on social media, visit booksonpod.com. Talk to you next time, Books on Pod.